Welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig. We're at the Agile 2016 conference in Atlanta, Georgia. And it's great to have with me Dave West. How are you doing, Dave?
Oh, good, Craig. Thanks for inviting me.
Been a big fan for a number of years. Tip for people who don't know you, though, who maybe recognize the name, tell us the very brief Dave West story.
Okay, so my name is Dave West. I'm the product owner and CEO at Scrum.org. Though my life of Agile has been a little bit longer than just Scrum.org, I was an analyst at Forrester Research. I ran the app dev practice and I covered the Agile space. So terms like Water Scrum 4, you may have heard of. And prior to that, I was a product owner and product manager for something called the Rational Unify process. So I've sort of come to Agile definitely from a failing orientation. I've seen things fail and seen processes be adopted to not massive success. So it's definitely a learning journey that I've had.
Yeah, so I came across you first with your work at Forrester, and the Water Scrum 4 is one of those things that it's a very simple in its implementation, but it's a very easy way to explain to people where the failings of Agile implementations, particularly Scrum, fall down. I mean, what sort of brought you to that, that whole idea and that name?
Actually, Craig, it's really interesting. So I was doing a presentation, you know, as an analyst, you seem to get paid by the word. I was doing a presentation in front of quite a large audience, and I was talking about the adoption of Agile, and at that point, this was probably about six years ago, the adoption was about 30%. 30% of projects were Agile, fair enough, had the big number at on the chart, and as I said it, this guy in the front row basically took me to task. He was probably a tester, you know, very, very detail-oriented, liked all the data. And after a bit of an argument about statistical variance and all these things, I came to the conclusion that actually, though I'd asked people if they were doing Agile and asked them whether they were doing Scrum, the answers weren't necessarily true. They were their perception. So we did a deep analysis and we did a lot of research, talking to a lot of organizations and really drilling into what they were doing. And we identified that they were doing Scrum, yes, but we only plan once a year. I mean, come on, we hate planning. And we're doing Scrum, but we release once or twice a year. Our customers wouldn't want it anymore. And it was really Scrum in the context of a waterfall lifecycle. So even though the teams, the delivery teams, the software, actually I can't call them delivery teams because they actually weren't delivering, the development teams were definitely using Scrum and all the ceremonies and whether they were doing it good is a different matter, but they were doing the ceremonies, they were following the titles, the roles, you know, et cetera, the artifacts. The actual organization was still very waterfall. So I coined the term water, which is the start of the lifecycle, that first bit, and then Scrum, full, that really just illustrates that characteristic or that pattern that we see in organizations.
Because that's always been a failing of Scrum, at least in the Scrum Guide, in my opinion, that it kind of assumes you have a backlog. You know, that's where it starts. And so that's the interesting thing when I do train teams on Agile techniques, that you have to talk about that water, but not doing it in the traditional way where someone comes with an idea, they sit on for 6 months, you know, but you've got to get to that backlog somehow. And that's, you know, when people follow through the Scrum Guide, so there's not a lot of guidance as to actually how to get that backlog in the first place.
Craig, I mean, exactly right. Scrum is definitely, it implies that you've got a magical product owner. It implies that that product owner is very empowered. It implies that product owner really has enough understanding of the market, of the existing organization, of the dependencies to effectively create a backlog and manage it in a way that allows the team to build the most valuable stuff first. So most organizations, it isn't as simple as that. Now, maybe if you're an ISV, independent software vendor, you've got maybe one product, two products, three products, very focused on a particular market where the product owners actually know about that. Maybe they're a founder, you know, so if you've only got one product, it's very easy to do that relatively. As you get larger, there's a significant amount of overhead, complexity starts to drip in, and Scrum does not have an opinion on that. You know, that's the reason why all of the scaling frameworks out there use Scrum at the delivery aspect or the development aspect, hopefully at the delivery as well, if you don't have the overhead of a release train or anything like that, but they don't, but they add other stuff around it. Obviously less extends Scrum to include lots of stuff around product and portfolio planning. Ultimately, though, many of those frameworks add a level of complexity that isn't always necessary. Yeah. And to be frank, a lot of organizations have created this complexity and they don't like to get rid of it. Mm. But you're right, the Scrum Guide provides very little guidance. It just relies on the product owner.
Mm. And I think, a lot of organizations go down the scaling angle. Your SAFEs, your LESs, your Nexuses, your disciplined agile delivery paths. And they all have different approaches for dealing with that, pulling from the community, really, things like your portfolio Kanban. But I work in a lot of large organizations where SAFE isn't the answer, where they're actually quite happy with their Scrum technique. Because in a lot of those organizations, you've got small teams, in a part of the organization that are building things, and Scrum works extremely well. But yeah, they've been sort of let down by that. And as a result, because the rest of the organization is still walking in this traditional way, that's where that water stuff really, really happens. And I see this thing of teams just waiting. They'll wait 6-9 months because somebody wants to give them the perfect specifications. You don't do specifications anymore. Well, to have the story card meeting so we can create the perfect specifications instead of starting 9 months earlier and getting nothing out of the door.
So I agree. It's funny that you sort of summed it up. There's many parts of an organization that don't need the complexity of massive amounts of planning. Frankly, marketing is a great example. Digital is another great example. The distance that you get between the customer and you ultimately slows you down and reduces that sort of lean startup entrepreneurial characteristic that is there and that you need to sort of, that Scrum takes advantage of, And I think that's very disappointing. But it is also kind of interesting that actually planning doesn't have to be that complex. So recently you may have seen Craig Nexus came out. And Nexus is a way of getting multiple teams that are working from the same backlog, so same endeavor, same project, same hopefully product, if you've managed to jump into that product world, which isn't an easy jump, but into that product world. What Nexus provides is an exoskeleton to Scrum. It's really just Scrum, but just provides you some guidance of how to...
Scrum with the word Nexus in front of everything, isn't it? that's been our joke. Instead of having a product owner, you have a Nexus product owner.
Actually, you still just have a product owner. But yes, that's a fair point. The point is that what we did with Nexus and what Ken did with Nexus, because Ken ultimately thinks that you just need Scrum. Mm. And what he did was, though, he pulled out all of those bits that were in Scrum that people just didn't read and called it Nexus just to make sure that they're reading it. And so, yes, you could argue that, frankly, just with Scrum, you can work this through. Your Scrum Master should be creating a NIT to, a Nexus integration team to resolve dependency issues that mean that you can't integrate. Yeah, no surprise. If your impediments are all about integration because you've got multiple teams working together, which they tend to be, then you need to do something about that. All Nexus does is provide you a mechanism, a ceremony, and a set of responsibilities or a responsibility to resolve that. So you're right that all Nexus is just Scrum. But it's
the simplicity of it.
It is, exactly. But people don't get Scrum, even though it's 16 pages in the Scrum Guide. They don't get it. In fact, yesterday at my talk, I did the future of Scrum at Agile 2016, and it was an interesting talk because I asked how many people had read the Scrum Guide. Because recently there's been an amendment to the Scrum Guide for the five values. Mm-hmm. Really good stuff to add that social system to Scrum. That I don't want to say a morality to Scrum, which because that sounds really weird, but that social system. And I asked how many people have read the Scrum Guide. Guess how many hands went up?
Not many, I'm sure.
That's after I'd asked how many people are doing Scrum, and everybody's hand went up. I was like, well, hang on a minute. It's like going to...
I can read the 16-page thing. I can read just three of these 300-page things. I'll take the three of the 300-page things, thank you.
Quantity. Anyway, so it's like going into a church and saying, how many people have read the Bible then? And everybody's hand goes up. How many people are Christians? Everybody's hand goes up. You're like, what is going on? And obviously the Scrum Guide is a lot shorter than the Bible and easier to read.
Maybe in an audiobook form or something.
Well, we have an audiobook form, though I'm thinking that the accent is American, so maybe if we did an English accent, more people would listen to it, maybe. Or Australian accent.
Or Klingon or something.
Or Klingon. Maybe. Funny you should say that. Somebody emailed the other day wanted to translate the Scrum Guide into Klingon.
There you go.
I think Ken's response was, are they mad? I think was his response. Don't give them your email address. They'll probably kill you or something. But it just shows you, though, that people don't get it. So the reason why Nexus has been created was to provide us with at least a mechanism to, when you've got a significant endeavor, you've got multiple teams, provide some, bring that guidance up, make sure it's very clear. And the thing of great thing about Nexus is it doesn't contradict anything that's in the Scrum. Mm. Many of the scaling frameworks do because they sort of compromise for the real world. Mm.
Well, it's
whatever
Scrum,
that is.
But right, you can do Scrum, but you need to do release train.
Yeah, we all know that. I love that. I love it when they say, "Yeah, Scrum's a great idea and Agile's fabulous," but remember that the constraints that we live under are the real world. Mm. And so, of course, we can't do that. So you're like, well, hang on a minute. Then how do you get that business agility? How do you deliver on that? How do you not do Water Scrum Fall? Now, Water Scrum Fall isn't all bad, Craig. Mm. You know, it provides us a great mechanism of empowering and enabling teams. I was going to use the word empower, but ultimately it depowers them because they don't get that ability to determine what they're doing. They don't get actually the benefit of actually inspecting and adapting on real software. Oh, they might do, but it'll be 6 months' time before they actually see it.
I think it's just a way of telling teams, particularly when it's bottom-up, when technology teams pick up Scrum and move forward with it, it's a way of saying what it is, because you have to start somewhere. And I think if you start with the water part, and then the teams down the end aren't ready to, you know, for that jump, then, of course, the business has kind of been yelling for this for years, right? So the natural thing is technology teams, particularly, to pick up that process, get really good at Scrum, but then they kind of go, oh, the rest of the organization hasn't come with me. And I think it's a good state to say, righto, now we've got the Water Scrum Fall happening, how do we fix it? Which means you go and find some DevOps, you go find some, you know, some portfolio Kanban or whatever it is to push you through the stages, and voila, you've fixed the issue.
Yeah, or realign to products or, you know, change. Mm. I mean, and that's the whole point, that it should be, yeah, Water Scrum Fall is definitely a stage that you go through in your evolution, particularly with bottom-up adoption. Now, Ken and Jeff's original idea was that surely when people saw this working, they would just adapt around it to use this. They've got this amazing set of people that can deliver software continuously, you know, because remember that the sprint review is not a phase gate. It is actually an opportunity to inspect and adapt at the boundary of the sprint. Mm. It is not a phase gate. So you can do continuous delivery. And I love to run that sprint review with production results of people using the software and get that sort of like, oh, bizarrely, we got 400 defects because of that and help desk was drowning. Did this actually work? Ah, well, that's an interesting learning. So, you know, but you get that. I mean, you've got this great team that can deliver working software. Mm. And constraining them in this large organization. So they always hoped, Ken and Jeff, that this would just go viral, like swine flu or mono, I think I described it as yesterday, because it's it's a sort of kissing disease, isn't it? So
you're telling the story.
So we're not told that story. But, you know, the way mono goes for a high school is the way in which Scrum should have gone for an organization. Mm. Unfortunately, it would appear that, you know, Scrum hits this barrier. And one of our PSTs, professional Scrum trainers, describes it as the A-bomb, the amorphous blob of middle management. Because executives would love that to happen. Let's be honest. They want to get stuff out. They want to innovate. They want to be the Googles of whatever industry they're in. They want to be the Ubers of sales order processing or, you know, distribution or car manufacturing. They want to be these companies. They go to the events where they talk to those companies and like, oh, wow. But frankly, there's a line of management and an organization that's designed around efficiency, that's designed around risk, that's designed around control. And frankly, Scrum hit that barrier. Mm. And Water Scrum Fall is the result. And the question is, what do you do next? Mm. And maybe it's one of these large scaling frameworks. Maybe it's something a little bit more incremental. Maybe it's just growing how you do your product stuff with something like a Nexus. Mm. Even though that's just Scrum. Maybe it's some other things that I don't know.
Mm. So before I leave that whole topic behind, I'm just wondering, you know, did it surprise you how much that term resonated with people that it took off? I know it's Forrester and those type of things do, you know, from any of those type of organisations do tend to, you know, get some legs, but it's something I hear in lots of places, and, you know, it's a fairly quoted term.
Was I surprised? I was a little surprised. I mean, at that point, everybody was talking about Scrum, but nobody had really given a model, a very simple model that was actually quite rich, because Water Scrum Fall is actually quite rich, because it really sums it up, you know, quite nicely. And it's funny you should say it. Forrester, obviously, you know, they've got a marketing. Well, they really don't. They're concentrating on helping their clients, and that clients is a relatively small subset of a broader market. So it still surprises me. You know what really just surprised me, Craig, though? I'm sitting in an audience at an event like this, and I'm just, you know, minding my own business, you know, on my phone or something because I'm paying loads of attention. And somebody comes out and goes, "What are Scrum for?" That was originally termed by Forrester Research, a gentleman called Dave West, and I'm sitting there in the audience. That's when it is a surprise. And I'm like, ooh, I get all yeah, happy.
It's nice when you see your slide come up in someone else's slide. Yeah, and
it's great, yeah. Particularly if they reference you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, typically I have it not being referenced, but that's another story. Scrum.org. I am assuming there's going to be, with the Agile revolution, we practice the, you know, we're open to all schools of thought. But some people, you know, they'll see Scrum and they're probably not aware that that there are lots of different, or not lots, but there's a couple of different Scrum flavors out there. Mm. Tell us just very briefly, what is Scrum.org and how is it different to some of the other flavors that people might be?
Okay, so... That's interesting. So the evolution of Scrum.org, and I think it's worth taking us back and thinking about that. So when Ken and Jeff created the idea of Scrum, which is 21 in October, mm-hmm. October the 19th, it was Uppsala. 1995, they went to Austin, Texas, and bizarrely, I'm in Austin that week, so we're going to do a little bit of a celebration, I think. We're just trying to organize it now, so if you're in Austin and that in October or around the world in October, celebrate, have a party, always an excuse. When they created this idea of Scrum, based on a lot of the work that was in the market to that date, like the new product game and things like that, they then were invited to the Agile, or to Snowbird. They signed the Agile Manifesto. Then, interestingly, Ken was heavily involved in creating this organization, Agile Alliance, mm-hmm. where we're at today. He created it in such a way, or they created it in such a way, where it was very hard to create ideas. Mm-hmm. So then he formed Scrum Alliance just to focus on this one idea and actually build a commercial model around
it. Which is part of the Agile Alliance, I guess, as you know, it fits under that umbrella of what the Agile Alliance stands for.
I mean, it definitely does. There's a relationship between the two, though it's not a direct relationship. Yeah. It's more conceptual, probably. So because Scrum Alliance is very focused on the world of work, interestingly. So that organization was created and they built a commercial model around it because, as we've learnt with SAFe, the best way for adoption, honestly, isn't just a great idea, unfortunately. It's a great idea combined with the ability for people to make money on that idea. Those two things have to be intrinsically linked. So that happened and Scrum Alliance happened and it was incredibly successful. CSM, all that stuff came out. Ken was a little disappointed. He was disappointed by, I guess, two or three things. The first thing he was disappointed with was that the Scrum Alliance was very much focused on the world of work. So they were doing things like Lego in their classes. Now, nothing wrong with Lego, love it at home, but he wanted it more focused on software delivery. That's really what his passion is. He, you know, our mission is to improve the profession of software delivery, not to improve the profession of project management or Lego. That's my personal home stuff, and my son loves to play Lego, but not at work. So he was also disappointed with the fact that you became a CSM by just attending a class. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to decouple assessments from classes. So you don't get certified in a class, you get certified by passing assessment. Now, a class is a great way of getting you to a point to do that, but it isn't, they're two different things. Now he had some challenges inside Scrum Alliance to do that. Fair enough, you know, different organizational model, everybody had their own needs, not dissing anybody. There was, I'm sure there was lots of bad feeling, but, you know, that's such water under the bridge, you know, different. Mm. So we formed Scrum Alliance primarily to focus on software delivery and to decouple the assessment model. And that's the reason why Scrum.org lives. We are very much focused on the profession of software delivery. Mm. We have an assessment vehicle. In fact, there's going to be some announcements tomorrow about it, some changes to the assessment model.
We can talk about that because this is not going to go in the next 24 hours.
So on Wednesday this week, I guess that's what, the 27th, we are announcing a restructuring of our PSM, Professional Scrum Master. So Professional Scrum Master 1.0. Currently, we have two levels, one and then the certification to become a trainer. Mm. We're actually putting in a middle level, so it's going to be 1-2-3, PSM 1-2-3, and with the idea that you've got a mechanism to validate your learning as you grow into the role of a Scrum Master. Mm-hmm. So the idea is where you've got the fundamentals mm-hmm.
so
with PSM 1.
I understand Scrum.
Yeah.
PSM 2 is I can help a team.
I can practice it. I can actually use it. It's mm-hmm. scenario-based questions, yep. And then PSM 3 is I can be a coach and a mentor and potentially a trainer, though there's some other stuff you'd need around that. And so that's the idea. So that we've got this.
PSM 3 is very much you have to go through more of a rigorous.
Well, PSM 3 is essay based. Mm-hmm. It's very hard.
Yeah.
PSM 2 is quite hard. PSM 1 is reasonably hard. Mm-hmm. They are all hard. We don't just, we have failure rates of about 40%, mm-hmm. which sounds scary. Obviously, we help you with open and, assessments for testing it. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like the GMAT or whatever. You can do tests to get through it. But the idea is we release it. So this assessment model, it's decoupled from our training. It allows you to validate your learning. Inspect and adapt, key idea, right? Also, it's managed by a third party, us. Ken is still heavily involved, including putting in questions that very few people would get right. I'm not even sure he would, to be honest. But, because he wants to challenge you. He wants to challenge the practice. He wants us to be the best of the best. He wants us to be striving to improve. He wants us to be a profession, not a job. And that's very, very important to him. So Scrum.org is very focused on that and very focused on basically improving the profession. We have a great PST community as well, professional Scrum trainers, all very software oriented, bunch of technologists like MVPs from Microsoft. So people that actually write code still, which is different.
Get
to
out
the
of here.
It's a crazy idea. I mean, I wonder how many people outside, all awesome people in Agile 2016, actually still can write code. That's been an interesting challenge. So that's what Scrum.org is all about, and that's what we do. And we've assessed over 1 million people. There's about 5,000 people being assessed every month. It's a great, and hopefully those people are a little bit better at software delivery after they go through this process.
The state of Scrum, where are we at? As it's coming up to 21 years old, it's about to leave home, key to the door. Where are we at?
It's interesting. 21 in the USA is a huge milestone. I think it's less so in Europe and the rest of the world. But 21 is when kids can drink. It's 21 is some, it's the last year of college often, or the halfway through their college education. It's a significant milestone. And I think Scrum's in that same position. I think that the last 21 years have been very interesting. That Agile is now being practiced by the majority of organizations. 90% of those Agile teams are using Scrum. Of some form. Over 1 million people every day are doing a daily Scrum. Over 1 million people. That just makes you go, wowzers.
That's a lot of people in the circle.
It is exactly, yeah. Luckily, they're doing their own. Otherwise, it might be a little challenging to get you in 15 minutes. Eh? And not all those people are in India, by the way. Some of them are in other parts of the world as well. And it's being practiced everywhere. I mean, it's funny. At Scrum.org, we get the emails from, hey, I'm in this, that was an African country I'd never heard of, asking whether we did a class in that country. It's like, wow. People want to translate it. We're talking about this into Klingon, for instance. Somebody wants to translate the Scrum guide into Klingon. Bit worried that the daily might be a little bit of an experience in Klingon. When they argue, there might be some sort of fight or something. The Scrum's incredibly successful. And I think the state of Scrum is that it's been adopted. Product owners, Scrum Masters, Scrum devs. I mean, the world is full of Scrum. The sad part of that is our profession hasn't necessarily improved to the level that we would like it to. I think business agility is still hasn't happened. I think we talk about Water Scrum Fall, we talk about the challenges of Scrum running in the enterprise. And ultimately, that's a little disappointing. We talk about the challenges of done. Oh my gosh, software delivery people have more names for done than Eskimos have for snow, right? You can say, they say, oh, is that story done? Oh yeah, it's done. Okay, I'm gonna move it in production. Oh, hang on a minute, it's not done. well, hang on a minute, you said it was done. Oh, no, it's not done, or done. You're like, what the heck's going on? So that's a real challenge. I think we ultimately aren't driving to value fast enough. We're not engaging the business correctly. We're not scaling in terms of the value that we can get out of it. I think that's a disappointment. But we also should celebrate, because I think that a lot of people not only have made a lot of money out of Scrum, but also I think ultimately software is being delivered better because of Scrum. Mm. Not perfect, but better, I think.
Yeah, good stuff. And what are you seeing from the Scrum.org side? Is the because there is that splintering, I guess, in the community a little bit, where Scrum.org was formed out of the Scrum Alliance. How are you finding Scrum in the Scrum.org side? Is it a growing concern? Is there more and more people every day coming?
Yeah, I think the brand of Scrum.org is all about software delivery. It's all about sort of a high quality bar. It's about quality, it's about software delivery, it's about, I don't want to say impartialness, but ultimately we are kind of impartial in a lot of ways. It's not driven by a select group of trainers or a select body of people. Ultimately it's about Ken helping drive this community of professional Scrum trainers. And frankly, that community cares more about the craft. I think they would starve themselves rather than give in, which is a weird thing and very un-American, perhaps. I don't know. But they, it's the home of the brave, maybe. I don't know, just to sort of bring it back to sort of America. But the I see that the splintering is actually starting to hurt our industry. I see that, recently for a large financial services company, they asked us, they said, hang on a minute, we've got all these people doing Scrum, but they seem to be doing it differently. And I said, no. And they said, yes. And I said, prove it. And they said, no, we want you to prove it. Could you run a series of assessments across these groups? So we assessed about 50 people. And we found it was a small assessment base and out of an organization of about 10,000. But it was interesting. We found coaches didn't necessarily know what a backlog was, really. They hadn't read the Scrum Guide. We found an inconsistency. It was like the Tower of Babel, maybe. Yeah. Everybody was sort of saying words, but they were all meaning different things. And we all know the story of Babel, that it ends up getting in the way of you delivering, in that case, a tower, but hopefully software, unless you're building towers, and then maybe that would be good as well. But and I think that's disappointing. I think, the Scrum Guide is ratified both Scrum Alliance and by us. It's ultimately the body of knowledge that describes Scrum. Mm. It's disappointing that people aren't looking at it. Obviously, the values were added recently, the five values, which is great. So there's a social system around it. But people that don't practice the essence of Scrum, that doesn't mean they're not doing good stuff. I don't mind. I don't know. But they're not doing Scrum. Mm. It's like they're not playing chess. So don't call it chess. Call it whatever you want. Don't try to use the brand of Scrum to sell your snake oil. Mm. Either it stands on its own or it doesn't. And just start with Scrum. Now, I know you have to add things to Scrum, practices in particular. You have to, do things around Scrum. You have to understand how to apply Scrum in the context of these engineering practices, etc. But do that, but keep Scrum.
And you mentioned business agility before. So if the mission of Scrum.org is around software, how does the rest of the wider business fit into this?
And maybe that's a really good question, Craig, because software is the business now. And as much as we can say, oh, no, it's not, companies that get it actually are getting it. The largest taxi firm in the world has no taxes. Mm. The largest hotel chain in the world has no beds. Hang on a minute. Mm. In spite of local government trying to stop these organizations from being successful, the bottom line is that software is the most important commodity.
But organizations still have things like human resources and yep. finance, and they still have initiatives and things they need to run. So if they're managing the world of work.
Well, that's an important point. I don't know if Scrum's right for those initiatives. It's not something that Scrum.org's interested in. But when software is a key component to whatever that initiative is, and in those examples, you'll probably find that software is a significant component to all those initiatives, then Scrum and Scrum.org is interested in it. I guess what we're really interested in is product delivery. Product delivery, and that both be new products and maintaining products. It's about products. What Scrum cares about, I mean, product owner, product backlog, hints there really, is product delivery. And those products could be anything. Now, ultimately, most products today have a significant amount of software in them. And that means that there's a significant amount of unknown. That means there's a significant amount of opportunity, opportunity to get it wrong, opportunity to get it right. The reason why we use an empirical process on those products is because to get it right requires us to deliver something and learn from it, right? Inspect and adapt is very important and get that transparency. So as long as we're delivering products and as long as those products have a large amount of variability, then Scrum's the right thing. I would argue that the essence of Scrum, the real, true essence of Scrum is owned by organizations like Scrum.org. It's defined by the Scrum Guide, and you need to get that and try to have one approach to Scrum in your own organization. And if that's a different approach to Scrum.org, fair enough. Just make sure it's consistent and make sure it's validated. Make sure that you've tested people to be consistent in it. That's what I would argue.
So what is on the prioritized backlog looking forward for Scrum? I'm not going to ask you for your 5-year plan because that wouldn't be so Scrum if we did that. But there is obviously things coming down the line on the backlog. What new and interesting things can we expect?
So a number of things. I think obviously Nexus came out, so we continue to add more stuff around Scale Professional Scrum and practices around that and ideas around that. You'll also see the changes to our assessment model, which has just come out. You'll also see, which is really, really interesting, how you measure value for products. So EBM, evidence-based measurement, is a key part of that. We're re-looking at that again, trying to make it more usable, because it's kind of hard to adopt, and because organizations have massive issues with value. When really, how can it be so hard? If you're willing to spend money on something, then surely you must understand the value of the you're trying to get out of there. But it still seems to be quite hard. And then in the future, there's two things that are really quite interesting. One is this concept of done. So Ken's been thinking a lot, and Scrum.org and the community, the PSTs, have been thinking a lot about how you can help people do done. And it would appear that at scale, done becomes a bit of a challenge. So the idea of a Scrum development kit or delivery kit, the idea that, and that's a play on words with SDK. So imagine that you have an artifact that has the definition of done and the resources needed to do that. You know, it could be ALM tools, could be, build scripts, could be deployment architectures, could be even virtual environments. And having an artifact that helps you sort of codify that and deliver that to the organization, and that allows us to unify these teams in a technology way, as well as, from a sort of Nexus way, bringing that together. So this idea of an SDK. The other thing that's really interesting is, so you may have heard of Agility Path back in the day. Ken was very interested in this. He was driving it with John Cotter and the change management guy. It would appear that John Cotter accepts that organizational change is almost impossible.
Wow.
He sort of said that. If you look at his podcasts and listen, sorry, watch his YouTube, just do John Cotter and YouTube, it's the big one. Click on it, you'll better see him. And he basically says, doesn't kind of work. And Gartner have also said the same with bimodal IT. You kind of, if you want to build agility into your organization, you have to start from afresh. It's very hard to change the existing organization to do agile. So the idea is this idea of Scrum Studio. And Ken wrote about it in Software in 30 Days, though it was sort of like just one chapter. I think we'll continue to try to understand what that looks like. We're going to continue to refine our understanding of it. We have a number of experiments in market today with our PSTs practicing it with customers. Now, they may be innovation centers that are persisting their products. So instead of handing them back into a traditional IT organization to manage, these innovation centers are owning them long term. So operations is getting pulled into it. They're looking at how they measure it with things like EBM. They're looking at how you can scale it with things like Nexus and the like. And they're looking at what the boundaries are, how your HR practices, how you budget for it, all of that stuff. So how do you build a persistent studio that delivers innovation on a business level? And what's the boundary between that and your existing business functions, like operations and support and help desks and phone systems and all that crap? So understanding that and managing that. So studio, SDK are things that are very high on my backlog, things that I want to do, and things that Scrum.org is very much focused on, coupled with continuing to improve our profession. So there's lots of things we need to do around that. We need to build bridges to communities like Craftsman. We need to build bridges to organizations like Pragmatic Marketing for the role of the product owner. We need to continually drive improvements around practices and get that out there. We need to help organizations understand what it means to deliver professional software. The values. We need to provide mechanisms to help people make their values real in their organization.
Sounds like the future's bright.
Oh, I think it's really exciting. Yeah. I think, you know, this conference is a fantastic conference for recharging you. You get, you know, 2,500 people who really believe. You know, there's a number of conferences in the US at the moment happening, and I have to say, this is a much better conference than any of the other ones, but there's just the same amount of passion.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been great talking to you. If people want to find out more about Scrum.org, where do they go?
Well, it name's in the title, www.scrum.org, obviously, or just hit me up, you know, dave.west@scrum.org. I always like to learn. I'm a very passionate person. Hopefully you saw that. Care about what we do.
You're the product owner, right? You're taking all our ideas and...
and ignoring them all. Yeah. No, which is every good product owner. But ultimately, I'd love to hear from you. This is, you know, I think the next 20 years are going to be very exciting for Scrum.
Absolutely. And the Scrum Guide you mentioned, which is, I guess, the guide, and is shared between the Scrum.org and the Scrum Alliance as the place. It's got its own.
Yeah, it has. Well. It's, even though we maintain the website, we don't. It is definitely impartial. It's owned by Jeff and Ken, actually. Mm-hmm. And they manage what goes into it. Mm-hmm. We just manage the infrastructure because you can't trust those guys using. They try, and it's always a disaster. Mm-hmm. And that's www.scrumguide.net. So have a look at Scrum Guide. You just Google it, you'll find it. If you're looking for a translation, you'll hopefully find it. If you don't, and you're willing to do a translation, ping us, and we'll help you make that happen.
Excellent. So we have a little thing we do at the end of the podcast, Dave. You know, our podcast, The Agile Revolution, and so we ask people to join us in a Viva la Revolution. Is he with me?
Oh yes, I'm definitely
right,
with
let's
you.
Let's go.
Viva la Revolution!
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Craig.